Welcome to the Community Living Show special edition on both radio stations on the NCRA radio networks. One is from Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, and the other station from CITR 101.9 FM.
Got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me.
And welcome to the Community Living Show. I'm Kelly Reburn, along with Gennargio Sullivan.
Okay, hello. Thank you for having me on the show today, Kelly.
That's cool. Good to hear, good to see you. Yes. And, of course, we have our technician, Laurence, on the board. So, and, of course, we have on the line now is Peter Bourne, who been blind since birth, now lives in Victoria, but was a residential schools from the Woodland School in New Westminster. He's been singing since he was 6 years old and was given his first guitar since he was 24, and an advocate for people with disabilities. Of course, Peter volunteers on the Mustard Street, Seed Street Church in New Westminster. I hope that I got that right, Peter. Do you still do that?
Mustard Street Church, yes, in Victoria, yeah.
Okay, so you've been doing that for more than 19 years, maybe more than 20 years. You've been supported through the Timmy's Springtime Telethon for more than 12 years and accomplished a lot of things in music. Good to hear from you, Peter.
Thank you, Kelly.
So I'm going to go with you first. Of course, we've been talking about this on our previous show in the past about the Woodlands. I know Richard McDonald's has been talking about it as well, and probably you have been talking about it. But generally, what is the Woodland Schools all about?
Woodland School is a big institution for people with disabilities. Mm-hmm. It's about 2,400 people, and I believe it started in 1870-something. If you want any further information about it, just go to Google, and they can tell you more information about the history of Woodland School.
Well, what I know about the Woodland School is it was a hospital at the time, and it was served for psychiatric hospital, and later was a facility for the children and developmental disorder, as well as runaways and the wards of the state. Now, tell me about their staff and what happened in those facilities.
Well, when you're at Woodland, you can't argue with the staff, and you have to do what the staff tells you to do. And in those days, you couldn't speak up in those days. One time, the facility is pretty big. It's a warehouse. I think they turned their warehouse into an institution a long time ago.
Right.
And they have some wards like Ward 7, Ward 9, M Ward, Ward Fraser Glen, Riverview. No, not Riverview, Fraser Glen, River, not Riverdale, but Mountain View, things like that.
Okay. And it closed in 1996. And what were your memories at the time? I know you didn't see
much. I left Woodland long before 1996. I left in 1969, March 12th.
Right.
And I was, other people from Woodland was moved to Vancouver Island in the Courtney Comox Valley called Bevan Lodge.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at Bevan Lodge from 1969 till 1976.
Okay. I'm also going to put in another residential school here. So I've got Gennargio here, who was also a part of the was a residential schools, but not in Woodlands, but it's called the St. Michael's Indian Residential Schools from Alert Bank. Yeah. So you have any information on?
Sure. I find it really interesting listening to you talk about the history of Woodlands and mm-hmm. the people that they so-called accommodated at the school. You said that there were people there with mental health issues and, you know, people that were runaways and in care. Mm-hmm. And so the residential school was set up way back when in the 1800s in Canada by the government, right, and Indian and Northern Affairs. And they were run by mostly Christian churches, predominantly the Roman Catholic Church in Canada. The Anglican Church played a big part of it, and the United Church of Canada as well. Right. And so the policy was to remove children from the influence of their families and culture. People like me, who lived in remote areas, were taken from their families, removed from their territories and taken to these residential schools, and they were brutally beaten, treated yes. badly for using language and culture, for being really in essence who they were. Mm-hmm. So I'm a Kwakwaka'wakw woman who was removed from Kinkam Inlet. My mother before me was removed from Turner Island. Mm. So there were two generations of our people who were taken to the residential school. And all of this was done as a means of really, in the end, taking the land, which is where we're at right now, mm. right? We're having to fight and struggle to regain our identities, our language, and our culture, and mm-hmm. even our land and our resources, you know, has been raped time and time again for generations now,
yes.
as have our people. We have a large number of people who have gone missing and been murdered. Mm-hmm. It all ties in to yeah. the era of the residential school.
Mm. Peter, was that kind of similar to the situation with the Woodlands?
Yes, but I wasn't. I was treated a bit roughly. I was accused of stealing the piece of cake when I didn't get any.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I had cigarettes blown at my face, too.
Oh, that's such a shame. Mm.
Well, one of the big things about these institutions is that they were basically starving the children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would get donations and things like that, and the matrons, you know, the priests and the nuns would eat like kings and queens.
Right.
And the children would get the crumbs that were left behind. A lot of people to this day who are First Nations won't eat oatmeal because they were force-fed oatmeal, and oatmeal had bugs in it, and you name it, right? Mm-hmm. They had powdered milk as opposed to real cow's milk, you know, and things like that. We were starved.
It was really bad, really brutal, devastating for that matter.
Devastating, mm-hmm. absolutely. You know, they were starving us emotionally, mentally, physically, and emotionally. That's what was happening. They denied us our families.
Mm-hmm.
They denied us nutritional food. Mm-hmm. You know, when we were on the land, we ate like moose meat and elk and salmon. What you would say are your resources right now is what we would have
mm-hmm.
as our daily staple, right?
Mm, right.
Mm-hmm.
Peter, what was was it almost similar to the same situation in the Woodlands?
Yes.
In what way?
You have to. I was in for 60 days, and then before you go home, you have to tell them. The staff have to tell you at Woodlands. When you go home, you tell them that the food is great.
Yes.
When it wasn't that great, and
So there was not enough food for everybody to serve around.
With 2,400 people, it's pretty impossible to cook the food the way you want them because you take, for example, raw oyster
mm-hmm.
or clam chowder is too dry or too not well cooked.
I see.
And how did they treat you at the residential schools? I mean, you mentioned being strapped or something when you were accused of stealing cake.
Well, I'm not going to name that, but when I was singing to the patient, they told me to shut up, and they told me not to sing love songs.
Not to sing love songs?
No. Or not to sing at all, am I right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
And what would happen to you when you sang?
Nothing much. They told me shut up, and then I had to. So I was I was in the choir when I was 16 years old, and they told me I wasn't going to be in the Woodland Schoolboys Choir because it's too late for me and I have to go to bed early, but I finally stood up for myself.
Oh, so is that when you became interested in singing to begin with?
Yeah, well, one of the persons who takes people to school liked my singing. One of the persons put me in the junior choir, and they said, well, he's good enough, so we'll put him in the senior choir.
Uh-huh.
And then I started going public when I was 16 years old. At that time, I didn't have my guitar at the time.
Can I ask you a question? Was Woodlands a good place for you, or did you see it as a place held with bad memories?
You have to tell the family it's a good place, but after that, it's a pretty bad place.
Why?
But I don't dwell on it.
Yeah.
You know, I really don't dwell on it because it's not, personally to me, it's not healthy to dwell on it. So I was happy to leave Woodland School.
So do you think having Woodland shut down was a good thing, or do you think it would help if it was still there for other people with disabilities?
I think it's a good thing to shut down. Mm-hmm. And I was there at the demolition of Woodland School Thursday, October 18th, 2011. Mm-hmm. And I was on Global News.
Yes.
And one of the songs I sang for the demolition when they knocked down Woodland School is We Shall Overcome.
Well, I got to tell listeners that around during the 1980, during the 1980s or around later 1980s, there was a fire at the school. Right?
That's right.
And only one part of the school was left standing. Am I right?
That's right.
Yeah. I was there at the ceremonies when they had the final wing being demolished. And I saw Richard and made a speech of it and everything. It was very emotional.
Yes. And at that demolition, I sang We Shall Overcome.
Yes.
So from my CD up, If I Can Help Someone Today.
Yes, we have the CD. We're going to play that to you when we take a break, and we'll play one of your songs, all right?
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
So this is the Community Living Show here on the NCRA Networks. We're talking about residential schools and the Woodland Schools from New Westminster. We'll be coming right back in just a moment here on the NCRA Radio Networks.
We shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome together, black and white together, black and white together. Oh, deep in my heart, that I do believe. We are not afraid. We We are not afraid. We are not afraid today. Oh, deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. We shall all be free. We shall all be free. We shall all be free someday. Deep in my heart, we shall all be free someday. We shall live in peace. We shall live in peace. We shall live in peace someday. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall live in peace someday. The Lord will see us through. The Lord will see us through. The Lord will see us through someday. Oh, deep in my heart, I do believe the Lord will see us through someday. We shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome. Overcome someday. We shall overcome someday. We shall overcome someday.
Welcome back to the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks. I'm, of course, Kelly Rayburn, the host of the show. Along with me is Gunarji O'Sullivan, who lived in the residential schools of St. Michael's Indian Residential Schools. And also along on our online is Peter Bourne, who was a residential school for the hospital in New Westminster. Of course, that building is now demolished. And of course, talk about St. Michael's Indian School.
Okay.
Has the building been demolished as well?
Actually, yes. It was recently demolished last year, and a group of people gathered together at St. Michael's Residential School in Alert Bay to witness the symbolic demolishment of this decrepit building.
Right.
And, you know, there was over 200 or 300 people who were residential school survivors, intergenerational survivors, even people from the Anglican Church came, Indian and Northern Affairs came. Mm-hmm. Our leaders, like Bob Chamberlain was there, Jody Wilson, even Perry Belgard, who is our Grand National Chief, came to witness the demolishment of this residential school. It was a historical moment for everybody,
mm-hmm.
and it was a healing journey for everybody. And it was different to everything that you see at the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, because at the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, you sit there and you talk about how you need to heal. You talk about what you're going to do to heal, but nobody does anything in right. that moment. But what happened here when we did the demolition ceremony is mm-hmm. they quickly demolished, did that part, the front steps of the building, began the demolishment. They sang a Kwakwaka'wakw song, and then they said, okay, now we're going to go up to the big house, and we are going to begin our healing ceremony. Bada bing, bada boom, it was done. And we were all in that moment, and we were in that moment together. And I think that's where we need to go at this point in our lives. We need to take that action instead of talking about the actions that we need to take. So on top of that, you know, Kelly, what happened after that was a really beautiful thing.
Right.
Here, I was at the demolition ceremony. I
yep.
had three cameras. Mine, my partner had a camera. My little daughter, Aisha, who's only 10.
Yes.
She would be described as the intergenerational survivor. Gary, you know, my partner, he's mm-hmm. been affected by my issues as a residential school
right.
survivor and intergenerational survivor. So each one of us had a camera. We shot it. And then we brought it back,
mm-hmm.
and I walked into Gallery Gachet to talk to Cecily Nicholson,
okay.
and I was telling her about what I had gathered and what I wanted to do and what I needed to do and why I needed to do it. And she said, you know, I think that's a fabulous idea, and I think that we can facilitate that here at Gallery Gachet. And the reason it was such a perfect fit is because it fit into mental health issues
mm-hmm.
Because I was able to share with the urban city this experience I had had as an installation piece, I was able to take them on that journey with me. So I wanted to introduce you to Cecily. She's
okay.
the financial administrator at Gallery Gachet.
Okay.
And she's going to tell you what Gallery Gachet's work is and where they are at right now. Cecily, hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
Okay?
Yeah, we can hear you good.
I barely hear.
For having us on the show.
You seem
and I just, you know, just to say a little bit. More.
Hang on.
A little louder, please.
Yeah?
Hang on.
Yeah.
We're going to start again. Cecily?
Okay, sure.
Okay. Cecily, are you there?
I'm there. Hi.
Hi.
All right. Okay. Now we're cooking.
Well, just once again, thank you for having us on the show today. And I just wanted to say a bit more about Demolishing Grief Phase 1, which was the installation that Ganarji installed at
right.
Gallery Gachet, and just to say it was a really powerful experience, and this immersive experience. She did this multimedia video piece that she was talking about, but
right.
Involving a material in the space in terms of photography, the cedar, and also the relationship with the Indian Residential School Society, who were really supportive
mm-hmm.
on either side of opening and in terms of ceremony and being present for our community members in the space. And it was, we received so much wonderful feedback about how important and accessible it was to work on some of those, some of that pain, some of that health issues, but in a space that was generative and working around art. So it really was a really wonderful installation to have in the space. So that's all. Just a shout out to Ganarji's work. At Gachet, we are multiply involved in terms of working on mental health for the downtown Eastside neighborhood, but also more broadly. And so we are trying to make connections with our local community, mm-hmm. marginalized in many ways, but also connecting them to broader conversations around mental health and around art and creating a social environment and one that supports social and cultural and economic justice as well as wellness and thinking through the elimination of discrimination and stigma, and especially as it impacts our community, which is, racialized folks, overwhelmingly Indigenous communities, members displaced from other parts of this land. And yeah, so it's a difficult time right now to talk about the fact that half of our funding has been cut.
Right.
We received that notice early in September with very short notice. I have to say that I'm unfortunately not allowed to talk a lot about the fine details of it, as we are still negotiating with that funder, potentially an extension of the cutoff, not a reinstatement, potentially an extension. So that part of that negotiation means that you know, we're limited in what we can chat through in the public. But yeah, the update simply is that we are still trying to secure sort of interim resources. Some wonderful partners and supporters have stepped forward at this time. We've had an amazing response in the community more broadly, just incredible letters and visits and artwork and all sorts of things that have been dropped off in person and put in the mail. And it's, yeah. I'm rambling anyway. Anyone ask me a question?
I'm just going to ask you, what were your fondest memories of the St. Michael's Residential School? What were your fondest memories?
She never went to the residential school.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's no. Okay. So, I, you know, my privilege to speak as an outsider to that. So, yeah, and at this point of, you know, I've learned the most about St. Michael's through Ganarji's work and through the conversations that transpired there.
I think it was a really
educational process, right?
Yeah. Sure, yeah, it was totally educational. I think the thing about the opportunity that I had is really what the story is. I'm a person who has been displaced, living in the urban city. I live in the downtown east side. I am witnessing the gentrification and how it's affecting our community at every level. And now the funding has been cut at Gallery Gache. Now that place is a place for people with who need mental health care, maybe healing through the arts and opportunities to sing. Like your friend
Peter Bourne, yes.
You know, like me as a multimedia artist to share these healing tools with other people. They have a lot of different visual artists there as well, poets from all over, like the Lower Mainland, and that come from out of town. You know, they have some theatrical performances there. I held a Red Jam Slam there.
Yes.
That place gives us a place to go where we can spread the news and the vibes of healing. Right?
Absolutely.
And if they cut the funding, where do we go? Where can we go? There's no safe place for us to go and express ourselves.
Exactly.
You know, and to reach out to each other and give each other a helping hand when we need it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's really sad.
And it's a really wonderful time to be thinking about strengthening that kind of work and strengthening our partnerships. And making sure that there's still space made in the downtown Eastside community and beyond for folks especially impacted multiply by trauma to be able to engage art as a path to healing. And so we're not alone in that agenda, and we're not the only space. So right now is a really amazing time to kind of hear how important people in this community especially think of this work. And it galvanizes us to hold the space. We may not be able to hold this actual space.
Right.
In terms of, we may have to relocate because of the devastating. I mean, the cut removes our operational budget, so it's devastating.
Which means that you can't pay the rent, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And so that displacement, certainly as we are on a 100 block of Cordova Street, which is being gentrified, you know, virulently. You know, this is definitely one of the issues at hand. But to say too, just to that call, is that we're not giving up on the need for this kind of work, and that we will make that work happen somewhere, if not here, and we're not doing that alone. And so it is an amazing time to hear of that kind of strength and concern for the arts and for the cultural, for our communities.
Okay, well, I do have another question here.
Okay.
Now, what have you learned from the funding cutbacks that you've experienced?
Well, I've learned that we know that the people to rely on at the end of the day is can't just be the government. That we're in a climate that is concerned about increasing clinical services, and I would argue more deeper relationships to institutional institutionalization and psychiatric models. We're not opposed to those models, but we understand that they need to be situated alongside other modes of critique and access to healthcare. And so we see a turn potentially more effort to displace community members here who are suffering through multiple concerns in terms of post-trauma and addictions and fundamental health issues generally. So we've learned, you know, who our allies and who our support and whose heart is really in this, and looking around and realizing that there are so many artists in this community. It's something special about that, and something worth thinking through. How is it that this community just so extraordinarily has so many incredible artists? Self-taught, you know, carving on the corners of the streets, like just busy doing in their SROs with multiple painting and drawing projects on the go, even with nothing. So it tells us something about what art and culture and the resilience of that beyond survival, like a resurgence relates somehow and needs to relate.
I'm going to bring Peter Bourne into the conversation. Yeah. Peter, do you have any comments on to this?
You know, is it going to be a cutback? That's going to be a total loss, and I think we need to put pressure on the government.
Yes.
And if the government won't help, we may have to rely on the lottery grant or the United Way mm-hmm. to give us the funding.
Go on, Peter.
You know, like in 2002, like the Liberal government cut back on the talking book program for people who cannot read or focus normal sight print. So we need to elect the person who understands the real meaning of the person with a disability and who the artists, like, for example, Rick Hansen. He's the artist in a way when he went around the world in Man and Motion.
Mm-hmm.
Terry Fox, for example. Chief Dan George. So here are the inspiring artists. And if they're going to do cutbacks, we're going to lose the inspiring artists, and we need to keep it going more than ever, keep it strong.
Mm. Gnarji?
Yeah, I was going to ask Cecily, is there a number and an email where people can donate money?
Absolutely. You're welcome just to visit the website for Galerie Gachet, which is just Gachet, GACHET.org.
Okay.
And it's really obvious if you'd like to donate. We're definitely open for resources right now. And also,
yes.
If you don't mind, I wouldn't mind putting a plug in for an event that we have coming up in November, because just to remind, you know, listeners and folks who are interested in the work, that the work continues. So we have a gathering, it's called For a New Accessibility.
Okay.
That's Convergence happening at Gachet in November the 20th to the 22nd. The information is also on the website. We've got some beautiful people coming, Amanda Katchia, Cheryl Larondell, Olivia Wei-Tung, involvement to Sure Youth Space, Enterprising Women, bunch of stuff going on, but we're looking specifically at the idea of disability and the ways in which very clearly the impact, as we say on the website, the social condition of disability is still rampant, and we feel it's a time to talk about access in terms of cultural platforms and mutual aid, so how to strengthen our capacity to support each other.
Okay.
So we'd really love it if people could drop in. It's a free event, and there's some amazing people coming to do performances and such. So,
awesome.
Yeah.
So that's at 88 East Cordova, which is on the corner of Cordova and Carroll Street.
Columbia.
Yeah,
the other side.
There
yeah.
you go. Okay, so on the corner of Columbia and Cordova, 88 East Cordova is the place to be on what date?
November 20th to 22nd.
Okay, I'll be there.
Thanks, Kanerzi.
You're welcome.
Friday to Sunday, the 22nd.
Friday the 22nd, Peter?
No, Friday the 20th, Sunday the 22nd.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, thank you very much, Cecily.
Thank you,
Cecily. You bet. Thanks again, Neil. Take care.
We're going to come back with more final thoughts in a moment here on the National Campus and Radio Association. You're tuned into the Community Living Show, both on the NCRA Radio Networks, on Co-op Radio, and on CITR.
I remember the years they took all the children, and they locked them away. There they taught them to pray. There were children each night who were quiet and crying. They are in the walls and the halls of my mind. How many little souls that surely were dying, and they'll bury so deep all the shame that they keep. They will all be alone in their Garden of Eden, alone in the walls and the halls of their mind. Oh, he cried to his father, "Please come help free me." Now he longs to be free of the wounds you can't see, and he tires of those demons that keep him from sleeping. Alone in the walls and the halls of his mind. Tries to be a father for his wife and his children, and he hides the pain that drives him insane, and that voice each night still quietly crying somewhere. Confront all his fears, reaches down in that hole to the pain in his soul. Now he knows his child who's been quietly crying, all alone in the walls and the halls of his mind. I remember the years you were the children, and they locked you away and taught you to pray. And your voices each night still quietly crying somewhere.
If you see your brother standing by the road with a heavy load from the sea he sold, and if you see your sister falling by the way, just stop and say, "You're going the wrong way." You got to try a little kindness, show a little kindness, shine your light for everyone to see. And if you try a little kindness, then you overlook their blindness, for the narrow-minded people on the narrow-minded street. Don't walk around and down and out, lend a helping hand instead of doubt. And the kindness that you stole every day will help someone along the way. You got to try a little kindness, show a little kindness, shine your light for everyone to see. And if you try a little kindness, then you overlook their blindness, for the narrow-minded people on the narrow-minded street. You got to try a little kindness, let off show a little kindness, just shine your light for everyone to see. And if you try a little kindness, then you overlook their blindness, for the narrow-minded people on the narrow-minded
with the Community Living Show here on the NCRA Radio Networks. We're just about almost out of time. Just to let you know that we do play the songs with Peter Bourne on the show. He's here with us. How are you keeping, Peter?
I'm fine, thank you, Kelly.
So,
and I'd like to thank you and all the audience members. You're looking good as always.
That is good. So where can we get your CD? I know you're not doing any more CDs, but...
The Lord give us in the provincial and federal politician take us away.
Yes, that's right. So,
and they do.
Yeah, they do.
So, the only way you can get it is Spectrum Press, and they can look to Spectrum Press, and they may have some of my CDs.
Okay.
Or, better still, get a hold of Jim Reynolds.
Okay.
The number, I believe, is 250-3399. I've forgotten his number, but he used to work for Spectrum Press, but I'm sure I...
Yeah, you can also... We can
have my CD.
Yeah, we can also check it up on your online, spectrumfriends.ca. That's the website for Spectrum Society for Community Living, and for our listeners to check out the website. Again, spectrumfriends.ca. That's the name of it. And probably have a search word for Peter Bourne's CD, I imagine so. Right? Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay. Well, Peter, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I just have one final question.
I wish I'd love to meet you personally.
Well, me too. We'll have to do it again.
Yes.
But
we will.
Yeah.
We will.
You wanted one question?
Yeah, I was wondering, as I was talking to you, if you had any mentors that you can acknowledge at this time.
You know, I like to say that keep on the positive side. And, you know, I come from the wrong way,
mm-hmm.
and now I'm in a group home run by the Greater Victoria Independent Living Housing Society. This is going to be my 30th year. This is the best thing that ever happened to me.
Right.
And I like to say to the listeners, don't give up, because you can do anything. If I can make a CD, if I can sing and play the guitar, so you can do anything. So never feel sorry for yourself, because it's not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But if you give up, it's not good for your health. But if you keep on the positive side, keep on the, like the song said, keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side, keep on the sunny side of life, you're going to be great.
All right. Thank you, Peter. And we'll look forward to calling you again soon.
Thank you very much.
Take care now.
Gayla Kassler.
And I want to ask you about your final thoughts of the residential schools. You've heard from Peter Bourne, from the Woodlands, and of course you're also residential schools. Any final thoughts about the future of the residential schools and kind of like that? What kind of vision you see?
Yeah, I guess I'm still struggling whether the demolishment of the residential school was a good or bad thing. I do know that Barbara Cramner, who's from my community, she's Kwakwaka'wakw, she's worked in the film industry. She did a film called Guadalas, right? And
right.
It was about a canoe journey. And she's recently finished a full-length documentary on that, which will be featured at the San Francisco Film Festival. And I think that's a beautiful thing. I personally, you know, Kelly, I believe what your friend says. You can't dwell on the negativity, but I also think that we need to be creative about the history. Okay, so
yes.
Here we have Barbara Cramner, who's made this feature documentary on residential schools. I did an installation piece. I also worked on the National Community Radio Association's project called Resonating Reconciliation.
Yep.
We hired 40 First Nations broadcasters across Canada, mm-hmm. through 40 different radio stations, helped them to build a relationship with the First Nations community.
Mm-hmm.
And they made 40 radio documentaries, actually 70. You can find that at www.ncra.ca. And
click through the search words.
That's right. We're sitting here together. We're talking about the history of residential school. Does not mean that we're actually dwelling on it.
No.
It means that we can't forget a history. We can't allow Canadians to forget that this is a part of their history and that there's a lot of work to do, and it's not just going to be me.
No.
Little old me, Ganorji, or Kelly doing all of this work by ourselves.
No.
It's going to take a team of people like you, me, Lawrence, and your friend Peter, Cecily from the Gallery Gache. You need to open your minds, open your doors, and let's all walk through it together, right?
Coast to coast to coast.
Coast to coast to coast.
Yes.
And that's, and I think that people need to identify what they know about residential school,
mm-hmm.
and others, Canadians and First Nations people alike, need to identify what it is that they're going to do as an act of reconciliation. Mm-hmm. I can reconcile with myself and say, man, I got a lot of issues here. I got to work through it. I think I'm gonna go to that demolishment ceremony. I'm going to make a film. I'm going to write a poem. I'm going to sing a song, and I'm going to paint a pretty picture, mm-hmm. right? Now,
I was going to say, and now you're doing Access Television, which is on community Shaw Community Channel, and you're dealing with more First Nation stuff. Tell me about
that. So I find ways to heal, and not just myself, but a community of people, to create pride and close that gap of awareness between people and even within ourselves. There's things that we as Indigenous people need to learn about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So as you know, I've been here at Co-op Radio for 20 years now,
mm-hmm.
okay? You know how I came through these doors? My brother Raymond introduced me to radio. I met him when I was 19 and he was 23 years old.
Right.
That was when this radio station was at Pigeon Park.
Yes, the old corner of Carroll and Hastings, yes.
You heard me when I said I met my brother when I was 19, right?
Yes.
So that means that I was adopted and he was adopted. Mm-hmm. And that all happened because of the residential schools again. Right? And so I met him when I was 19. He was 23 years old. He brought me to Co-op Radio when Spirit Whispers was on Wednesday nights at 11.
Yeah.
And he introduced me to my culture by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I had to reconnect with myself, my brother, and through radio, my community, the arts, the culture, and the history.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I have four radio shows here. They're not all mine. I'm holding down the fort. I do When Spirit Whispers on Mondays between 1 and 2:30. Tuesdays, Snow Wild, which is a language and cultural revitalization between 1 and 2. Wednesday night, Late Night with Savages.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. We had so much fun on that show sometimes. Last night we had Patsy Burns Your Wagon, and she's a comedian. Mm-hmm. And we called it, well, never mind what we called it. It's a late night show, but it was basically a play on words with Patsy's take on the elections, and then Thursday, Klahalia FM. And through that, I did a national broadcast, right?
Yes.
You know, when I do that every now and then, it was called Democracy.
Yes.
Right? And we invited Sid Tan, who's from the Chinese community, and they're dealing, at the time, they hadn't gotten their apology from the government, and they were dealing with the head tax issue.
Mm-hmm.
So he decided to use that opportunity to bring down a group of people to rally for an apology. And they brought down their head tax banner and everything. And he and I went on the air, yakking away, just pulling the show together as we go. And during one of the music breaks, he turned around and he looked at me and he says, "You know, Ganarji, you're really good with the mic."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Thanks." He says, you should be on Access Television. I said, "Yeah, sure. Sure, Sid. Okay, let's do it." Yeah. Thinking that it would never happen.
Right.
A week later, I was called to a meeting. A week after that, I was sitting in front of a TV crew of like 3 to 6, you know, cameramen, lighting, everything, the whole nine yards. I was just totally blown away. And I felt honored to be invited into that world.
Mm.
And so for me, it's a natural progress to take radio to the next level. So we just had a few cameras in there. It's the same thing, right? It's just a different ball of wax.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Now, you have a cousin named Dallas Steiger.
Yeah, he's my cousin.
And tell our listeners what he does. And he's also disability, and he's also First Nations
That's right. He's Kwakwaka'wakw, just like me. And I think he's Mount Currie Indian as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Dallas had a mom named Violet. That was my cousin, right? And Violet had died she died from a head concussion.
Right.
And about a month later, her husband was racing Dallas to, preschool?
Preschool, yeah.
And he was in such a hurry, he got hit by a semi-trailer.
Mm.
And that's how Dallas became disabled.
Wow.
And so he lost his mom, and then he lost some of his abilities after that.
Wow.
But you know what? That hasn't stopped Dallas.
No.
Dallas has more talent in his little finger
right.
and more motivation in his little finger than most people out there. He's not a slouch.
No.
You know, he's out there and doing the Special Olympics.
He's
a musician. Like, he writes his own raps.
Mm-hmm.
He's involved in theater. He's an amazing young man, a mm-hmm. beautiful soul.
We had him one time on the Community Living Show, so I'm hoping to have him again to mm-hmm. see what he's up to.
Yeah.
Around about, so...
Well,
thank
when you
very
do that
much.
Again, let's have a family reunion.
Cool, that'd be great.
Yeah, I'd love to be here for that.
Well, thank you very much for helping out with the special community.
It's been my pleasure.
And we'll hopefully we'll get in touch with all of you next week on same time, same stations, the full hour on the CITR Radio 101.9 FM, and also our half hour show on Co-op Radio. So thank you very much for listening, and we'll hope to talk to you again soon.
Gail Castle.
Gail Castle.
Lord, help me walk another mile, just one more mile. I'm tired of walking all alone. Lord, help me smile another smile, just one more smile. You know I just can't make it on my own. I thought I'd never needed help before. I thought I could get there by myself. And now you know I just can't take it. Humbled heart on bended knees, I'm begging you, please help me. Your golden throne to me, to lonely me. I need to feel your touch of your tender hand. Remove the chains of darkness. Let me see, Lord, let me see just where I fit into your master plan. I never thought I'd needed help before. I thought I could get there by myself. And now you know I just can't take it anymore. With a humbled heart on bended knees, I'm begging you, please help me. I thought I'd never needed help before. I thought I could get there by myself. And now you know I just can't take it. Heart on bended knees, I'm begging you, please help me. With a humbled heart on bended knees, I'm begging you, please.